they'll write this whole thing out that took them like 15 minutes to write, and it'll take me 3 seconds to delete. I'll just swipe, delete, gone. All of your work, your magnum opus. I love that you spent so much time thinking about me. It took me 2 seconds to erase it from my memory forever. You dumb bitch. Getting tired of hearing all these noises in my head. I can't seem to make them go away. Sick and tired of hearing you say I'm already here. When you gonna get up and go away?
Okay, season 3.
Let's get it.
All right. Welcome back to Bad Ideas Social Club. My name is Aaron McCall.
And I'm Joe Madison. And this is a space for growers and showers and failures and friends.
You know, just starting our third season, this podcast has afforded so many opportunities to spend time with and to speak to people that genuinely inspire and energize us. I think it's safe to speak for you in that, Joe.
Absolutely. It's that natural just kind of ecosystem that's really got us powered up.
And at this moment, this is truly a passion project. It's not a source of income or really profitable in any way, but the experiences we're picking up along the way cannot be measured in monetary terms. Not yet anyways.
Dude, I know.
And one of those invaluable experiences was the conversation I got to have with Kaylin Moore. She's a storyteller and host of the award-winning podcast Heart Starts Pounding and an executive producer of the horror thriller audio drama The Timekeeper.
I found so much joy in thinking about you talking to her because I know how icky sticky this spooky stuff makes you. And I could not wait to imagine you squirming in your seat.
Oh, man. Well, luckily she didn't fuck me up too bad. But
that's good.
Yeah. But Kaylin piped in from L.A. and we got into where our dark curiosities come from, her approach to telling stories in a way that is meaningful and connects with her audience, but is also respectful of the subjects. Plus, she's got experience in film and television as an audio engineer. So, you know, podcasting kind of makes sense. And it's rad, actually. She injects pieces of her personality in her storytelling without getting in the way, which I think is a really special thing.
All right. Before we dive in, don't forget to follow wherever you're listening. Leave a 5-star review and don't forget to tell your friends.
And if you want to help support the podcast, buy a t-shirt or a hoodie or something from our Cotton Bureau store. There's a link in the episode description. Also, we've partnered with City Built Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, Michigan to create a Bad Idea Social Club West Coast IPA, and that baby is available right now in cans and on draft in the City Built tap room. It's also seeing distribution across the state, so if you find that baby in the wild, take a photo, let us know. And with that, here's my conversation with Kaylin. You know, it's just another one of those things that I didn't consider when starting a podcast, how like weird it is to talk into a microphone by yourself.
Yeah. And like the editing process and editing yourself, it's all weird. All of it's weird.
So let's start at the beginning. Give me the origin story. How was the monster created?
Let's see. How far back do we want to go?
Let's go all the way. Let's go all the way.
So I'm from like this really small, like Stephen King kind of town in New England. Very like creepy lore, very dairy, Stephen King. But when growing up, I had always heard stories of my great grandfather, who was just this amateur reporter in town who worked for the local paper when he was like 22 years old. He started working as a journalist at the Hartford Courant, and they put him on obituary duty because he was just no one. And so they gave him like the lowest level stuff to do. And as he was working obituary duty, which also is morbid, it just like runs in your blood, you know, as he's like working obituary duty, this is 1910 about, he starts noticing that all these obituaries are coming in from this one woman's home. She like, there's this woman who's, everyone calls her Sister Amy because she's really religious. She's a little eccentric, but she runs this old folks home in my town. And my great-grandfather starts realizing like, oh, a lot of obituaries are coming in, like way more obituaries than would make sense. I get that these people are old, but like they die really fast when they get into this house. So he kind of starts poking around and he ends up going to this, there's one pharmacy in town. And back in the day, if you bought poison, you had to sign your name in this little black book. And he looks at the black book and she's buying enough arsenic to kill like an entire army.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So much arsenic. And so he... just through poking around, he realized, oh my God, there's a serial killer in our town. And this like 22-year-old guy who just works at the lowest level you can at your job ends up cracking open this whole investigation that leads to the arrest of the serial killer that lived in my town. And they believe she killed up to 60 people. She was convicted on 5.
Wow.
But yeah, she was really, she killed 2 of her husbands. She had no shame. She just really went for it. So that's just always kind of been in my family, that story. And so from a young age, even just learning about my family, like from my dad, who would always tell me that story, like it was always really investigative and dark. And this, I do think it's kind of in the blood of my family to really want to like pursue our dark interests and to kind of like ask questions and look around and follow our dark curiosity. So a big theme throughout the show is darkly curious. It's the idea of if you have a dark curiosity, like let's follow that. Where does that rabbit hole lead us? And you know, what's there?
So how old were you when you kind of like fully understood the whole situation with your grandfather and kind of what that meant and the weight of it?
That's a good question. I think I had heard the story from a young age, like under 10, you know, which is probably too young to hear about those things, but like, whatever. We all just like talk about that. I think a lot of families in general, you know, it's all, I don't know, parents love to talk about like the saddest stories they've ever heard or like the scariest stories with their kids. But when I was 15, I really started digging my heels into that story because it was like lore in my family. It was legend and I wanted to get the facts. So I started going to, we have like a local library in town, a historical society. So I started going there and poking around and I found like letters that this woman had written. I found old newspaper articles and I ended up emailing this guy who I knew was also investigating this story. And his name was M.W. Phelps. And he is a true crime author. And he reached out to me and he ended up coming and meeting with my family. And we all talked about the story. And I'm credited in that book, actually, because I provided him with some letters that I had found and some translations of like this woman's chicken scratch writing. And then M.W. Phelps now has like a few top 100 true crime podcasts as well. I know he's partnered with iHeart on some stuff that he's invested some stories. He's also Connecticut born and bred. So he also talks about Connecticut a lot, he's done podcasts on those stories as well. But he wrote a book called The Devil's Rooming House, which is all about Amy Archer Gilligan and my great grandfather. Definitely. It really like informed a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in. And it's cool because it also, I don't know, my great grandfather was like on the side of the people who wanted to solve crime and wanted to make the community safer. And I think, and he was such an honest, noble man. I really like look to him. I've never met him, but again, he's like this lore figure in my family, this mythological figure. And so he's kind of become like a North Star in a way of like, okay, if I am going to create content in this space, like, how do I make sure it's productive and helpful? How do I make sure I'm handling it with care and talking about it empathetically, trying to add context so that we understand the story in a way that is not judgmental, I guess.
You also worked, I believe, in production and development and sound design for film and television, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I did. I did. I actually studied sound design in college and then I took the development track once I graduated and I started working for James Wan, who does The Conjuring and he did Aquaman, he did Saw, he Insidious, like all those scary movies that I love.
What sparked the interest to go from life on a movie set to starting your own podcast and Heart Starts Pounding?
Wouldn't you believe it was unemployment? Why does anyone start a podcast? We're unemployed. No, I mean, that's kind of true. Like the industry just got hit so hard in COVID. Like movies were not being made. I worked on one show that got made in COVID and it was like a feat. I worked on Are You Afraid of the Dark for Nickelodeon, which was an amazing experience. I loved that show. I loved the cast. I love everyone that was involved with it. But it just got to a point where there were no more projects being made. And I was in my apartment like, what can I actually make? And so I ended up making a scripted podcast called The Timekeeper, which is more, it's an audio drama. So it's more of the things I'm familiar with. It has a cast, it's YA, it's adventure, it's genre, it's scary. Oh, did you listen to it?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know about The Timekeeper, but like, I'm so proud of it. I love it so much. We had such an amazing team. The sound design is phenomenal. I was so happy with how it came out. Yeah, so that was a really fun project to work on. And it was like much more in my domain of like, okay, let's do a production schedule. It's a lot easier because all the actors were at home recording in their closets.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Like I didn't have to put everyone on set together, but that kind of production I was like much more familiar with. And then that started ending and I was like, oh, now I have to do this all over again. What am I going to do next?
So the correct me if I'm wrong, but The Timekeeper came out not that long ago.
Timekeeper was in production in 2022, but it came out in April of 2023.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So I had finished it before I really got started on Heart Starts Pounding, but the timing just worked out where it came out as Heart Starts Pounding was starting to grow as well.
So is there anything you've covered on Heart Starts Pounding that has kind of stuck with you that you can't really shake off?
Oh, man. Yeah. So much stuff. I cover like a wide variety of things in Heart Starts Pounding. So like there's some true crime cases that are really stick with me. And then there's some like haunting stuff. Probably the biggest true crime case that stuck with me is this guy that went missing in Chile. His name is Boris Weisfeiler. He disappeared in the Chilean wilderness. And as you start reading about the story, you kind of learn that like, okay, the property he disappeared on was maybe belonged to a cult that was in the woods. And then you read about the cult and you're like, okay, the cult was maybe Nazis that came from Germany after World War II and established a cult. And they also were maybe torturing and killing political prisoners per the government's request. Jeez. It's like the story just expands so much the more you read about it. And it all kind of is framed through the lens of this like American professor who lived in America. He was Russian, but who just disappeared in the Chilean wilderness. And still to this day, he disappeared in 1985. No one has any idea, really. I mean, we have kind of an idea. He was probably abducted by the cult, but his sister's still alive. She doesn't know what happened to him. The US government's really embarrassed, so they don't want to talk about it. The Chilean government is even more embarrassed because of like Pinochet's crimes and how there was a cult operating in the woods there. So they don't want to talk about it. So no one can really get any answers about this guy that went missing. And that's one that I come back to and I think about a lot because someone's got to know. If I can dive into the story of a person, that's the stuff that really sticks with me, I think.
So where's the line? I've heard you cover some pretty fucked up stuff, but is there anything that you won't touch?
Definitely. So I do have an episode coming up that I'm going to push it a little on, we're going to see how it goes. Normally the podcast is pretty PG-13. I would say I don't like to talk, just as a personal thing, I don't like to talk about sexual assault. I don't like to talk about things that happen to children, like horrible things that happen to children. Just because it's, you know, I do a bulk of the research for the show and it's a lot to like live with that for a while. Yeah. And a lot of times victims' families are still alive. Like there's people who could hear the content and still be like re-traumatized by everything. So that's just kind of always running in the back of my mind. But I want to push myself to tell stories that still feel relevant and like people could benefit from hearing them. And maybe as like a public safety thing or whatever. But like things that are a little darker. So I do have one coming up that I can think of that's going to push the envelope. I just talked about Griselda too in an episode and she was the Chilean the Colombian drug lord. And Netflix just did a show and her story is really dark, but I have one coming up that's even darker. So we're going to see how I feel about it.
I'm kind of stoked to see where that goes.
Yeah.
Working and living in with such dark subject matter, like that has to weigh on you and you have to just drag that around with you. So what are you doing to keep your head on straight and your mental health in check?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I have the luxury because it's my show. I can just pick the stuff that doesn't bother me too much. So a lot of the topics I cover are also because I can like handle them mentally. So I don't know. There haven't been a ton of times where I've had to like take mental health breaks, but in general, I try to like work out a lot and just run until I can't think anymore.
Yeah, I love that.
I would say actually like sometimes I don't know, you're a podcaster too. Sometimes the actual like act of making the podcast is more stressful than like telling the story. So there's just a lot I have to do, I think, in general to clear my head. And I could do a better job. You know, I still maybe don't sleep as much as I should.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are doing it right.
No, I don't think so. I think COVID maybe like fundamentally broke our ability to cope or to like to self-care. And so now I'm like, I could just stay up on my phone. And I think I'm going to. So, you know, like I just indulge a little bit.
So working through a lot of the stories that you do, like, where are you ranking your hope for humanity?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Hope for humanity. I'm a pretty, I don't know, I was going to say I'm a pretty positive person and then I like stopped myself. So maybe that means I'm not. I know I was going to say like, I'm a pretty positive person. And then like today I was like watching all those Apple Vision Pro videos and being like, this is the end of humanity.
Yeah, this
like,
is it.
This is it. We're just going to become devices after this. So I think I think the fact that we see a story of a serial killer and we're like, oh my God, that's so shocking, proves that most people are good. Like we're not so desensitized to things that are horrible because they happen all the time with no reason to us. For the most part, people abide by the laws of society and people are kind to each other. Maybe people are grumpy and mean to each other, but they're not like killing each other. It's still really shocking and upsetting, and people take it very seriously when someone dies. And that's just kind of like humanity's testament to be able to like behave and be good. So I think that's why maybe we enjoy dark content, is because it does feel like it's few and far between, just like aside from like the entire state of the world. But it does feel like, oh, I live in a time where I can still go about my day and feel safe. And so it's even more shocking to hear about someone who got kidnapped or someone who disappeared without a trace, because we're just not dealing with that every day. So I feel positive, I guess, in that sense, if that makes sense. I think people are good is the short version of that.
For the most part. I think I was listening to an episode of your podcast recently where it was the one all about animals, right? And I think that's my that's my trigger, I think, where I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna get through this one. But it was like, it's fucking people, dude. it was like, that was it was just, yeah, I don't know. It was just awful.
That one's tough. Okay, yeah, I agree. And it's funny because the episode I did about animals, I had the most people reach out to be like, hey, love the show, I'm going to sit this one out. Totally understand that. Absolutely get that. So, but I thought that was interesting. Like, there is something about animals where we feel extra sympathetic towards them, maybe because a lot of times they can't help themselves. So it feels even worse when a human is evil to an animal.
Yeah.
So yeah. But in the end, the guy that was evil to his animals got eaten by his tiger.
Which is
so
poetic.
Maybe it was a little poetic. Yeah.
Do you have animals yourself?
Not right now. No, I live in a building that's just not good for dogs. But the second I live somewhere where I can get a dog, I'm getting one.
What's the move? What kind of dog?
I want like so I've never had a dog before in my life.
Oh, it's a blast.
So, yeah, I know. And it just looks like this joy that I've never been able to experience. So I'm really looking forward to it. But I don't know much about dogs. I want like a mid-sized, mid-energy dog.
Yeah.
I want to take it out hiking, but I don't want it to be like too crazy.
Yeah, I went the wrong way. I have a 85-pound pit bull with puppy energy. And he's four, and the dude's my best friend in the entire world. You know, best cuddler I've ever met in my life. But not a starter dog.
Yes. I've looked at like into the shelters in LA, and all of them are like, pit bulls are not starter dogs. Like, do not volunteer to help out a pit bull if you've never dealt with dogs before. Which I get that. I wouldn't want a dog that I wouldn't be able to handle.
I'm just going to try to roll into this and not pretend like I'm taking a sharp left turn. Do your personal experiences or beliefs play into how you tell a story or which stories you choose to tell?
These questions are all really good. I think that yes and no. I am not a journalist myself, but I try to play journalist in my stories, in the sense of I want to stay neutral. I want to stay true to the facts, and I don't want my how I feel about certain things. It maybe sounds vague, but I don't want how I feel about things to color the way I tell the story. So I try to like just tell the story based on like the facts that we have. And those things can be like everything from like how I feel about the death penalty or how I feel about abusive boyfriends or how I feel, you know, I just want to tell the story how it is. My audience is really smart. They're going to figure out how they feel. They don't need me to guide them in that way. And also I think the story is just better off being told without a bunch of personal opinion and personal guidance and stuff on my end. But then also just, I think the stories I choose to tell are maybe it's like a little bit of my taste and just the things that I prefer and the things that I'm scared of. And
yeah,
but also the stuff that I'm sensitive to and I don't want to talk about, you know, I don't talk about those things. So, I don't know, like you've listened to the show. How do you feel as a listener?
I feel like you're pretty down the middle, but like, I do like that you do inject some of that, like, I don't know, you'll say something kind of smart ass or something.
I take the low stakes stuff and I'll comment on that. Or if I feel like there's something that the whole collective audience, we can kind of be like, okay, what is this person doing? Then I'll say that. Yeah. But I'm never going to say like, I don't know. I've heard other shows that will like diss men or something, you know, for like no, for a reason that doesn't like fit the story. So it's like, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of listeners that come from everywhere.
Yeah.
Places that are very different from where I was raised. And I think there's something for everyone in this show. And I think, yeah, just telling the story how it's meant to be told is the best way to handle that.
Do you have this thing that, and I think you do, because I definitely have this thing, and it's kind of a fucked up thing to say, but where you kind of almost find comfort in that like dark space?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think that's about?
I don't know. I don't know what that's about. I think someone told me once that we like horror movies because we had chaotic childhoods or something. And that doesn't exactly feel right to me. But I think there is something about, oh, actually, I do kind of have an answer. And this is based off a conversation I was having that someone else brought this up. But like, as human beings, we have this need to survive. Like back in the day, when we were hunter-gatherers, there were way more threats to our life. And we're kind of built for that. You know, we have all these senses that will like fire off if something feels wrong. But in our day-to-day lives, most of us don't really ever feel that threat to our life. Like we need to protect ourselves. But I think there is something biological inside of us that's like, I need to feel like I'm protecting myself and protecting my community. I need to feel like I'm scanning for threats. And so we like to indulge in dark things because maybe it plays into that biological need we have to survive. That's my best guess for now.
I'm not fucking with you. I literally almost said the term, oh, it's kind of like when you're like your heart starts pounding.
It's that feeling when the energy in the room shifts.
You're putting out an absolute shit ton of content, right? You're putting out social stuff, what, every day? You're doing obviously the podcast, the YouTube version. And you're doing it at such a high level.
Thank you. Yeah.
How do you find time for the other important aspects of your life?
I think this is the most important aspect of my life right now.
Oh, that's
honestly
great.
Yeah, it is. This is all I've ever wanted to do with my life, and I finally get to do that, and it's the most fun I've ever had with a job, and so I don't ever want to take that for granted. So I spend almost waking out every waking hour on Heart Starts Pounding stuff. If I have a down hour, I'm just thinking of ways that I can like improve the community. Like, is there something I can do for the community? Is there something more I can do for Patreon members? Is there something like, I don't know. I'm just like always thinking about it. And sometimes I'll go to dinner with friends, but for the most part, I am doing Heart Starts Pounding stuff. Yeah.
I think I know the answer, But aside from Heart Starts Pounding, do you have other creative outlets?
Yeah, you know, I still play music. I was raised taking piano lessons. I know a little bit of guitar. I still try to write music when I can.
Oh, I love that.
That's like really creative for me.
What is your, where do you lean in terms of music? Like, what do you like to make?
I listen to everything and I make straight pop. Like, I love that. That's what I love to write. I love to write like four chords.
Yeah.
Just like perfect structure pop. I don't know if I'm any good at it, but like usually that's what comes out of me. Yeah, just like really basic stuff. Cause I think maybe that's all the skills that I have. But that's also just like a great way to, I don't know, when you're writing music, a lot of it is stuff that you can't just say. So it kind of comes out in a different way. It forces you to like look at things through a different angle or to like try to come up with themes in your life.
Yeah. So is
and, like, connect the dots. Yeah.
Like a self, I don't know, self-expressive, kind of learning a little bit about yourself, therapeutic maybe, or would you ever put it out into the world?
I would say I would never put it out into the world. Thank you for asking. It's funny. I joke with my husband all the time. I'm like, what if I just drop a pop album in the middle? How confusing would that be? And that's a total joke. I would truly never do that. But I just think it'd be hysterical if like I tried to launch a pop career in the middle of all this. It's like a personal journal, I would say. Like it's all like it's so embarrassing. My kids will probably never even see it kind of stuff. Like, you know what you write in your diary? It's that level, but it is great self-expression. I also am trying to use the show as a form of self-expression, like really subtly. The way that I inject myself into the stories is really intentional. And it's so that people can get a little more of a sense of who I am, but also I can like kind of get out. Yeah. Like I'll do that with how I frame episodes sometimes, like trying to come up with an idea that links everything together. That's usually just a way to kind of get out the stuff that's in my head and see if people are on the same page as me. Yeah. So there's still a lot of self-expression that happens in the show, even though I am not as like expressive.
It's funny. I think as a graphic designer, I think there are thousands of other people who can do what I do, but to do exactly what I do, I think it requires my exact experiences and
totally
and my exact perspective. And I think that's what makes your podcast too, I think, a little bit different than some of the other paranormal or true crime podcasts. It's nice to have that personality.
Yeah, I love the way that you put that, because I think it's true of any creative endeavor. Like some of my favorite writers are like Joan Didion. Like anyone could just write about this stuff. Like the actual subject matter she's writing about is not particularly interesting, but it's the way she thinks about it. And it's like her personal lived experience that colors all of her writing. I think that is like the most masterful thing you can do as a creator, is like put out a product that on the surface, oh, maybe anyone could have made this. But when you really get down to the bones of the product, you're like, no one could have made this except for the person that made this. I that is so masterful.
I did an art installation a few years ago, and it was at a brewery, and as one of the pieces was up on the wall, I see somebody walk up to it and I hear him go, "Oh, I could have done that." So do you ever feel that kind of like, I don't know, like the feedback or anything like that? Do you ever get like defensive, or are you just like, "Yeah, but you didn't"?
I totally know what you're talking about, because I can sense that in some of the comments sometimes, the sense of like, I could have done that. And I take immense pride knowing that they couldn't, because to some extent they're not. But also like I have a master plan in my head. Like there's stuff that I'm doing that I'll never tell anyone. I think there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. And same with being an artist. There's like a reason you chose that color. There's a reason you put that specific piece on a building or on a different medium. Like there are a million things going on in your head, and someone who looks at it and is like, oh, I could have, like, that looks really easy, I could have done that. You couldn't have, I don't know, made the same choices, the smart, intentional choices. And so I think that's a brain dead take. I don't respect people who think like that, so I don't take their criticism seriously.
How do you handle the comments when they kind of come in and you're like, God damn it?
I'm a lot better now. What I used to do is just have my husband read all the comments and just tell me the good ones. That's or tell me that's the way to do it. Or I was like, I'm not going to look at the comments. I want you to look at the comments. And if there's a consistent theme of something that I could change, let me know. And I will like take that criticism to heart. But if it's a lot of the comments aren't that, it's like little like personal preferences that people don't like. And so I can't do a lot about that. Yeah. But on Instagram and TikTok, I get a lot more comments. So I'll just ignore them.
I like to think that I'm pretty, you know, I got a thick skin, but I'm also, turns out, incredibly delicate.
I get that. Do you also like react to comments?
Yeah. So we got a comment on Facebook, which.
Oh my God. It's Facebook though. Those people are insane.
Yeah. No, they really are. But it's really like 99% positive. But then there's that one that glows, right? And that it's that one that like jumps out of you. And then we kind of took a chance and posted a photo to announce the season 3, what we're doing right now. And somebody was like, this is the cringiest thing I've ever seen you guys do, but all this shit. And I responded in not a favorable way, toward the point where my wife was like, you should delete that. And I like read it again and I was like, yeah.
Never respond. My feeling on responding is like, if someone has a legitimate concern about the podcast and they comment that on somewhere where I can comment back, like say, you got this incorrect, or why did you say something like this? Like if it's something that I have a real response to where I can be like, actually what I said was correct, here's the source. I'll put that there once. And then every comment that comes in that says the same thing, I just delete. I'm like, this, I gave my official like PR person response. And now I'm just deleting all the other comments. Because if you want my official response, you can read it. Anything else that's just like a personal gripe or rude, or like I get your cringe a lot. Like a lot of people don't like my intro. A lot of people don't like the sound I make at the end. They'll call it cringe and stuff. Like I delete it, or I just ignore it, because once you start fighting with people in the comments, then your fans see that and they think you're petty, and then it just gets worse. So and eventually you'll get to a point too where you have so many fans, if someone says something like you're cringe, they'll jump in and be shut the fuck up. So like you'll get advocates for the show. But did you say something really mean back?
Yeah, it was awful. it was about his mother and all of this, like,
yeah,
like incredibly sexually aggressive comments about his dad as well. And although it was, to read the comment, undeniably hilarious. I get that. Yeah. But I'm like, all right, well, maybe not.
My favorite, actually, one thing I get a lot of joy out of is sometimes someone will write like a really long comment about why they think I'm wrong and incorrect and like this is a bigger problem, or like I'll say something, I'll pronounce it a little differently than they do, and like you're contributing to the degradation of the English language, blah, blah, blah. They'll write this whole thing out that took them like 15 minutes to write, and it'll take me 3 seconds to delete. I'll just swipe, delete, gone. All of your work, your magnum opus. I love that you spent so much time thinking about me. It took me 2 seconds to erase it from my memory forever.
Yeah. God, that's so good.
You dumb bitch. Like, no, but that to me is like the power play that I love.
That is so good.
And that it kind of goes for everything. Like, I think everyone who's doing any sort of creative outlet, even if you're writing pop songs in your bedroom, like me, you know, there's like... just little old me.
I'm never going to be able to listen to your podcast the same way again without that. Just like,
it's so bad. Probably my most embarrassing quality is like sometimes, because I also record the podcast really late at night, usually to like get in the mood and everything. But I'll be like so tired, I'll go in and I'll be like, I like pretend that I'm like Taylor Swift going into a session.
I'll start.
I'll start like singing We Are Never Getting Back Together into the mic as if I'm a studio musician. It's so delusional, but it also like helps get my voice warm in order to like record the podcast. So I'll never stop doing it, but it's so my legacy. Good. Yeah.
I love that. Like, you know, like I said, I'm never going to be able to hear it the same way again.
Good. Good, good, good.
So what's next?
I don't know. I think like, I definitely am working on YouTube. I have the show on YouTube, but it's just the RSS feed and it's like a stagnant image while the show plays. So I'm working on YouTube native content. Like I want to have a Heart Starts Pounding show that's specific to YouTube. It's not a podcast. It's just a YouTube show. That's like my next big thing that I'm working on. And then like I see Heart Starts Pounding as like a umbrella. It's a brand. So the podcast Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is like one thing that fits under the Heart Starts Pounding umbrella. And there's like a whole world of stuff that I want to build out. So yeah, I have lots of ideas. I'm also just one person. So I'm like working on how much I can actually put out into the world. But hopefully as the show grows, I can just put all of the resources back into the show and like continue to grow other things for Heart Starts Pounding. That's the goal.
So do you think you're going to do any more fiction stuff?
Definitely. Definitely. So in maybe December, I did an episode called Smee, which was like a horror short, and that was fiction and it was like received really well. The audience really liked it. And so I want to figure out a way to do like a two-parter and kind of like write another piece of fiction or have my husband wrote The Timekeeper. So I want to have him maybe write something for the show that we can either do with actors or like really build out the sound design and build out the world.
Was his role just a writer? Or I say just a writer, but was his role a writer or was he also, did he do any voice acting in it or anything like that?
He wrote and directed it.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, I would want him to like help me write another thing and like probably direct it if there were actors. Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking for another way to make fiction. It's just hard in podcasting. There's no money in fiction podcasting. Yeah.
In my experience, there's no money in podcasting.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that.
That's exciting. Before we go topic hopping, is there anything else you want to talk about?
So my pop album is actually debuting on Spotify. No.
What would you call it?
Oh my God. If I had to name a pop album, I would call it Heart Starts Pounding.
Of course.
No, I have no idea. I'm literally never going to talk about this ever again.
When you're gone, what do you hope people say about you?
I love Family Legend. Like I love that person in your family that died before you were born and you just hear so many stories about them. So I hope I'm that person in my family. Like, oh, wow. Kaylin was like up to really interesting stuff and she lived a really random life. So I want to share all the stories I can about her.
Have you gone back and looked at any of your grandfather's like articles or anything like that? Anything that he's written? Have you read that?
Yeah, I've read a few of his articles. I've read, he was the treasurer for this thing called the Rogue Detecting Society in my town. So I've read some of his like chicken scratch notes for as being so treasurer. Cool. So there are some things of his that I have been able to go back
and read.
That's
kind of
cool
because
cool.
Like you're kind of leaving behind this whole body of work.
Yeah.
It's just going to be around. It's there. And I think that's
actually, I changed my answer. That's what I hope people say about me. I hope I outshine my great grandfather. I'm actually doing all of this so that I'm the one people talk about in the family, not him.
Step aside, old man.
Yeah. Get out, Carl.
What would your last meal be?
Oh, my last meal. I'm really lactose intolerant. So I would get I would definitely do dairy. I would do all the dairy I could. Yeah. I would do like the best mac and cheese I could find. And then like a Neapolitan shake from, what's it called? From In-N-Out. And then I would just, my stomach would just blow up and I would die before they even got me.
That's how you go.
That's how I would go. Yeah. I would do it as a big, like, fuck you.
Finish the thought. Creativity requires,
I want to say like repetition, probably. I think you have to like do things a lot so that you find the best version of the thing that you're doing.
I love that. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Oh man, best advice I've ever received. Oh man, why am I blanking on all the advice I've ever been given right now? The best advice is just to, like, anything worth doing is worth doing well. Like, even the little stuff in your life is just so much better if you do it well. Like, so I've just, like, over the last year making the show, have really learned to, like, take my time with each thing I'm doing and, like, think it through, which I still am not great at. But even choosing little things, how to design my website, like, my life is just going to be better if I do that well and I take the time to do it well. And that it just, like, grows from the ground up. Like, if you just do everything you can as well as you can, like, everything in your life looks so much better.
What's the worst?
Just, like, all that millennial, when we were growing up, all that, like, toxic positivity. Like, you can do anything. You can do anything you put your mind to. Like, stuff that doesn't mean anything. I'm really competitive and I'm really results driven. So I need to, like, I can't have someone tell me, like, it'll be fine, or, like, you got this. Like, I have to, I need
that means nothing.
That means nothing. Like, tell me how I can win.
Yeah.
And then I'll do that.
What advice would you give yourself just starting out?
Go all in. That would be, like, I was really hesitant to, I was, like, nervous about posting on the internet because I was scared people would see me. I was nervous about making the podcast because I thought people I didn't want to hear it would hear it. And so I, like, held back at first, and I wish, like, none of that matters. My worst enemy could hear the podcast, but as long as I'm proud of it, then great, listen to it. So just go all in and do it the best you can.
What do you think got you to that point?
Probably, I think this is the first thing I've done in my life where I've been able to put all of my energy into it and actually see the results. I had a lot of, like, fruitless experiences before, especially, like, working in development. Like, I would read all these scripts and I would pick a project I liked, and then that project would die and, like, nothing ever got made. So I was always like, I don't know if I'm good at anything because I keep doing all these things and I don't see any results. So I don't know if I'm good at stuff. And then this, I was like, oh wow, I made an episode and this many people listened to it. And then I made another episode and even more people listened to it. And I just was able to, like, see the results and, like, realize how driven I am by getting those tangible results back. And so, yeah, once I learned that, I was like, if I just keep doing this, it'll grow because I am putting effort into it and it's growing. And I just want to put all my effort into it and watch it grow as much as it can. So yeah, probably just the act of doing this really taught me that.
So it's just go.
Yeah, just go. Just go all in. Like, don't do anything halfway, because that's going to be the embarrassing thing. Like, if you're afraid of someone making fun of you in a group chat, they're going to make fun of you half-assing it and it not being very good. But if you're going all in, then, like, who cares who's saying what? Because at the end of the day, like, you'll be proud of the thing that you're making.
If you're going to put your time and your energy into creating something, like, you got to be the first. You know, you got to be taking care of yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
What are you watching or listening to right now?
I'm rewatching The OC. Thanks for asking.
I haven't thought about that show in years.
Actually, when you asked about self-care, I would say that's how I decompress from all the dark stuff I read all day, is I watch absolute, like, brain massage, nothing bad happens television at the end of the day. I'm kind of dueling it. I'm in my free time, I'm rewatching The OC, and I'm also watching the Ken Burns documentary on Vietnam, because that's just really, really well done and really interesting. But that one's also, like, so dark. So rewatching The OC and then listening to, I just started a book about Poverty by America. It was, I think, like, the best-selling nonfiction book of last year. So I started listening to the audiobook.
In rewatching The OC, do you keep going after, God, what's her name?
Marissa.
Yeah, do you keep going after she dies?
Yeah, I got to do the whole thing. Like, I'm probably halfway through the first season on my rewatch, and I just got to go through the whole thing. I also...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. You've had, no offense, 20 years to watch the show. I'm not going to be upset if you didn't know Marissa dies, but... like I have to like read the Reddit threads while I watch. Like I get on OC TikTok and I have to like consume what the culture is saying about a thing while I'm watching it. So
that's the way I am with Lost.
It's like, absolutely. Like, that's a great one to do that with. There's never really any shows where all of your friends, everyone at work, everyone's talking about it. So like I find those communities online.
Yeah.
I miss that.
What can you not live without?
Oh, that's a good question. Like baths and hot tubs, like hot water that I can dunk myself into.
I love that.
I would say that'd probably be top of my list.
Do you have any regrets?
All of my regrets stem from not fully committing myself to the things that I wanted to do, either because I was embarrassed or I thought someone would judge me or I didn't know if it was a good idea. Like I'm so happy I got to this point, but I do think I would have just built more confidence in myself if from a young age I was like, oh, this is a thing I like. I'm just going to go all in and do it and really not care what people think.
Yeah. Well, and especially at a young age, it's hard to do that.
It's so hard to do it. Yeah, totally. It's like so much worse when you're in middle school and high school because like you're so afraid of people judging you, but it's like marginally better in adulthood. It's still pretty hard.
It's still tough. You gotta be very comfortable in who you are, I think. Otherwise
you have to be really confident. Stuck. Totally.
Last question I have for you. Are you okay?
Am I okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Are you okay?
I am good. I'm tired, but I'm good.
Definitely. Yeah, I feel that. Are you on the East Coast, West Coast?
I'm in Michigan.
Okay, so it's a little later for you. So
yeah, it's about 10. Before we go, where can people find you?
People can listen to Heart Starts Pounding, the podcast, wherever they get their podcasts. It's also available on YouTube. And then for shorter kind of daily doses of horror, I also have an Instagram and TikTok where I post short form content. All at Heart Starts Pounding.
All right. Well, cool. How do you feel?
I feel great. No, thank you so much for having me on. This was, awesome.
Again, thank you so much for doing this. I can't tell you how much it means that you carved out the time to come hang out with me for an hour. And
no, you're a great interviewer too. You ask really thoughtful questions.
Thank you. Let's get out of here.
All right. Bye.
Man, the dark nature of what she does is literally in her blood. It's wild hearing the story about her great grandfather.
It's in her family tree.
Yeah. And like, you know, I love my family, but I don't think I have anybody doing.
You got some crazies in there you could research.
Yeah. Well, fucking so do you.
That's true.
But man, her being able to direct that energy into something productive is really fucking rad.
Yeah.
To be able to go all in and to be able to shed that, anxiety and the distractions that allow you to just put yourself out there, and just the depth of the stories that she's telling, like those, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but like those have to weigh so much. Like, I don't think I would be able to carry that around.
Yeah.
I know that, like, you know, my baggage gets heavy and I start carrying around baggage from other people too. And I don't think I could carry that around.
You'd have to really check your empathy. You'd have to have empathy to a point. And then at a certain point, you have to be kind of clinical about it, where it's like, all right, I need a certain amount of empathy, and then I need a certain amount of information. And those are the things I need to tell this story. I think it comes down to identifying passion more specifically. So it's easy to say I'm passionate about photography. It's easy to say I'm passionate about podcasting, or I'm passionate about spooky shit. But when you really, really weed down to the specifics, I am passionate about interacting with people through the realm of photography. I like that conversation and interaction. I believe that Kaylin is passionate about telling stories, about gathering info, and about learning, whether it be in her past or someone else's. It just so happens that she's also super excited about shit that's really fucked up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I also love her approach to the comments. Which
I've
struggled with a little bit, and I love that she got a little fired up. The comment that I was talking about with her was from someone that Joe and I used to work with.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised to see that motherfucker just be a shithead. Never going to work with him again. It's fine.
I was so grateful for your wife, because when I saw your comment, I was like, ah, I probably should have said, like, as a friend and like as a co-creator, I probably should have texted you right away. But I was like, he's a grown man. He knows what he's doing. that just let that be.
He's reacting. But I also, like, off yeah, his emotions.
He's very visually and transparently reacting. But you know what? Like, for me, what happened was, like, I channeled my ma, who, like, was always like, you just don't know what people are going through. Like, any way someone reacts is evidence of what they're going through themselves. So this individual is just probably very critical of themselves, probably very, like, very hard on themselves and what they're posting and that kind of thing. And I feel for them in that way.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't. Okay. So
okay.
It's just so easy to fall into the trap when you're criticized for following your dreams.
Yeah, it's true. You know? That's true. It's true.
Yeah, and talking with Kaylin too was also a reminder that who we project as on social media is just that. It's a projection. It's selective. And while it was a fun moment in our conversation, I really like took a lot away from her sharing about her closet pop concerts.
Yeah. And, very, very rad.
You know, because it's just a reminder that every person you see has so much depth that you would never guess. You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know right. Who the fuck people are. So don't comment dumb shit.
Okay.
All right, man. You got anything else?
I think that's it, man.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week. Bye, babies.
Getting tired of hearing all these noises in my head.